listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, the Nichols and May of the Now Generation, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Hello, Judy. It's the Mike and Judy Show, back one more time from Roberta's here in Bushwick, streaming live on the Heritage Radio Network, and we're laughing because our two esteemed guests today...
Just cracked up. Nichols and May of the Now Generation.
That's so awesome. And Todd Ants are the only two guests we have who even know who Nichols and May are.
We need to start skewing older.
So before we get to the guys, though, Judy McGuire, my co-hostess with the mostest, you came here today with a bit of a bee in your bonnet. I think some nasty punk rocker kind of crossed you somehow this morning. It's Joe Strummer's birthday, right?
I love Joe Strummer. I was a huge Clash fan. I still am, even though, you know, they're not around in a million years. But yeah, interviewing Joe Strummer was pretty much the highlight of my music writing career. And so when he died, I let our friend John Holmstrom at Punk Magazine run the entire interview, which was... It was really, I mean, I took so much of this guy's time, and he couldn't have been nicer, and I was, like, practically crying. He hugged me. It's a really good interview. It's the best thing I've ever, best interview
I've
ever done.
I'm going to start crying now.
I know. I'm getting teary. But, so some stupid punk website today to honor...
Stupid punks.
Goddamn punks. was honoring Joe Strummer's, 59th, what would have been his 59th birthday, and said, oh, you know, there's this interview. It's written by this fangirl, but despite that, it's really well written and insightful. I cop to being a fangirl.
A girl wrote something insightful?
I know. It's like a girl would be funny.
A fan wrote something insightful?
Judy McGuire is a professional motherfucking journalist. Okay? She's on top of her class. Fangirl, please.
I was a mouth-breathing fangirl in this interview. I told him that I love you so much. It was kind of embarrassing.
Wait. There's just because you're a fan doesn't make you a quote-unquote fangirl. I mean, we're all dorks. It's just a matter of degree. But I think not being a fan would be the real crime. I mean, people who are jaded music journalists who are not impressed by the people that they're talking to. It's so
weird.
Sad.
Sometimes you read reviews of records or movies or TV shows or whatever, you know, like in magazine, and the person just doesn't even seem like the kind of person who even wants to be watching the TV show. And
it's right.
You're only watching it because, like, it's your job and you're just like, I really would rather be doing something else with my time, so I'm going to write a negative review of this. It's just like... If you know, supposedly that's an objective opinion, but it's, I don't think it's objective. I think it's just an opinion from a disinterested person who doesn't have anything to say about the subject. I'd much rather read something by a fan than by just a non-fan.
Plenty of time for a dispassionate presentation of the news and trying to be objective and taking it from
you're not trying to be objective, you're talking about Joe Strummer.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't hire
him. Yeah, it's a motherfucking clash.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. All right, so the guys from The Onion today. I'm, like, thrilled. Everybody loves
this is very
The
exciting.
Onion. This is great. So Joe Garden is the features editor of The Onion and also the author of a bunch of Cash and Quickly.
If you want a book written fast, call Action 5. We are very good. Hilarity written on demand while you wait.
call in now. You can have the book done by the time the show is over.
Yeah. I've got my ThinkPad with me. I can...
But your books are actually very funny. The Dangerous Book for Dogs, The Devious Book for Cats, and The New Vampire Handbook. There's not a trend that you do not miss.
They're great for nieces, nephews, aunts.
People you don't really know that well.
Right. Yeah.
But what could I get, like, this book for my cat?
No, but these are really funny books.
I know they are. They're great. And Todd Hanson, of course, is a longtime writer for The Onion, but is also the voice of Dan Halen on Squidbillies, which can be heard on Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network. That's a great gig. How do you get a gig doing a voiceover on the Cartoon Network?
I met those guys through being a fan of space, being a fan, coming up to them and going, "Oh my god, I'm a huge fan." When I first met them, I was flipping out.
But you also wrote a Space Ghost episode.
Well,
right?
I went down to Atlanta and worked with them a couple different times on some scripts, but only one actually got through, and I think it was only aired once. It was like the different version of Aqua Teen Hunger Force that didn't end up being ever made, except in that one time.
So what's Space Ghost really like?
Space Ghost, the guys that do Space Ghost is written backwards. That's the reason it's so weird. I watched it for years before I understood even what it was. You know, like I was like, how do they even write it? Like, it's so bizarre.
Mm-hmm. You had to. Well, it's funny too because watching Space Ghost made me hate Dennis Leary even more, because there's this whole episode where he's like, well, I'm only doing this. I don't really like your show. I'm only doing this because my kids like it. And the response was, "So the feelings of your stupid kids are more important than mine." I was like, I hate Dennis Leary and I love Space Ghost.
Well, Space Ghost has been very dismissive of some of his guests.
Oh my god, I couldn't believe that show was really punk rock. Speaking of punks, I thought that show was punk rock because they would put things on the air that you couldn't believe that they did. Like they had their interview with Goldie Hawn. Goldie Hawn comes down. And before her interview comes down,
and for those people who haven't seen Space Ghost, just to understand that Space Ghost is an animated talk show host.
Yeah, and he's talking to a TV image of a video interview of a celebrity, and anyway, she comes down, but right before or right after, he just introduces the band,
Zorak,
which the band is identified as the Beatles, but it's actually the band Pavement, and they just do an improvised like noise jam. The entire time that Joe Goldie Hawn is talking, and all that Space Ghost does is just yell at Goldie Hawn and go, "What? I can't hear you, Goldie Hawn! I can't hear you over the sound of the Beatles!"
There's just not enough conceptual talk shows.
Just so hilarious. I mean, how funny is that?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's why, and that's the thing we're fanboys for. We're total fanboys for the comedy nerd stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys about
and for Joe Strummer.
I would have shit myself if I had if I met Joe Strummer.
Luckily, I had evacuated prior to meeting him. I wanted to ask you about being funny on demand. Like, I find it can be very challenging.
In the business, we call that FOD, funny on demand. It's kind of weird. It's just like when I write things, I'm like, this works structurally as a joke. And then it's like how well it goes over is just like, this didn't work, this worked. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, but you guys have been amazingly consistent at The Onion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think.
Are we talking about The Onion or Action 5? Because I'm not in Action 5.
No, we're talking about The Onion.
I could never pull off Action 5. I can't believe you do that. Like, I don't have the ability to be funny on demand in that way.
Or just being funny on demand when you have a deadline.
I barely can fucking handle that. Like, yeah. Honestly.
You've done it for you've done it for 20 years.
I've done it badly for 20 years. Like, deadlines, I've done badly for 20 years. Yeah,
it's funny because I can't do it. Like, I can not function unless there's a huge deadline looming in front of me.
I can't function at all without them. But I'm saying I just barely function even with them. Yeah.
So you guys have been working together for how long?
God, 18 years now.
Oh, a long time, man. Wow. Long time.
Yeah, I
met Joe Garden. You want to know how he was before to me before he was an Onion person? He was the guy dressed in a freaky bug head, like a big weird insect head, like one of the residents or something, that was made. It kind of looked like early Devo because it was like a stocking cap stuck over his over his head, but it also had like insect googly eyes attached to it.
He was coming through your window?
No, he wasn't coming through my window, but he was coming on stage at a pachinko show, and pachinko was a punk rock band in Madison, Wisconsin, and pachinko comes out and starts playing, and before they do, this weird man in this bug head and a bathrobe walks out on stage and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, whatever bombastic intro it was that he said," and then he goes, "Pachinko," and then pachinko starts super loud, big noise, and then the dude whips off the robe. He's buck naked except for the freaky insect head, and he just dances around the stage while the band is playing. Yeah. And I was like, That is the most punk rock thing I've ever seen in my life.
The pachinko hype man.
Yeah.
Where is YouTube when I really need it?
Was any of that footage ever uploaded to YouTube?
There was a guy that ran, he ran OK's Corral. He had like shot almost every concert that was there, and then he lost it in a fire, which was a great, like, it would have been a great archive of like the noise.
Yeah, that
noise
was
a punk scene of the early to mid 90s.
Right, it really was a total
loss. Was the Onion born out of like a punk rock scene?
Well, no, it was born out of like a countercultural nerd scene. It was born out of a slacker nerd scene that overlapped with punk rock and also overlapped with many other things in Madison.
Yeah, I don't know how punk rock it was when it started. There was a punk ethos because they were just like, you know, they were basically making fun of every other. I mean, Madison at the time had all these like, you know, free alternative weeklies, free socialist weeklies, free musical weeklies or whatever, and then they were just like the free fuck you weekly. They just did not care, and they were just like basically making fun of every other publication, and you know, they were anarchists in that respect, but they were also like money making anarchists. So they were libertarians, I guess.
See, the thing you have to understand when you talk about
libertarians, meaning like Republicans who smoke pot.
When you talk about where the Onion came from, you're talking about two different worlds, two entirely different worlds: the business side and the creative side, and they didn't have anything to do with each other. So when you're talking about who started it, I mean the very first year that it was the same people, but then One year later, one guy named Scott Dickers bought it, and one guy named Pete Heisey bought it, and their deal was that I have total control over creative, and you have total control over the money, and they're not going to overlap at all. And that lasted for like 15 years, and then finally, like, I think they couldn't stand each other, or 10 years or something like that.
That seems like a good plan, though, for a publication, well, for the business side, to keep the hell out of the creative side, which never seems to happen. They're supposed to be church and state,
right?
Yeah,
right.
But they never.
It never happens.
Yes,
yeah. Something, you know.
It's really
very idealized to think that that can exist.
But it really did exist at The Onion for many, many, many years. And that is why The Onion is what it is.
Right.
What? I mean, is that fair to say? Like, it wouldn't even be different than normal comedy if it hadn't had been for that freedom to be
The thing is, we had a lot of freedom to do things like put naked, another back to Joe nudity, like naked me on the cover.
Wow!
It was buried inside. It was not a pretty picture. I didn't, but it was. But there was that. There was also, all these crazy. You know, we did all kinds of weird conceptual covers, like the Little Onion Golden Book cover.
It was. I don't know. It was a unique situation that doesn't. It wouldn't have happened if it was in New York or if it was in L.A. or if it was part of the entertainment industry. It happened because it was outside. Right. So it wasn't from a punk rock scene. Mm-hmm. I won't say The Onion grew out of a punk rock scene, but everybody who was writing there was into punk rock at one point or another in their lives. And at least, you know, the writers. Mm-hmm. And it really was an underground publication, is what I'm saying.
It was underground.
Yeah, wasn't part of any scene, any publishing scene, because we didn't know anybody at all. Like, when I met his name is Dave Willis. He also created Aqua Teen Hunger Force with Matt Malero, who also worked on Space Ghost. And when I met him, I was a total mouth-breathing fan. It was like you meeting Joe Strummer. I hadn't met anyone. So I was like, holy fuck, I can't believe it's that Space Ghost guy. We didn't know anybody. We were totally underground.
So what were some of the early formative stories or headlines that you loved that you thought got you widespread attention? Was there something that broke you guys out into the world?
Well, I think it was just the invention of the internet and the intelligence of somebody to put it up on the internet.
Yeah, I think I know the one that I can pinpoint the story that actually broke us out and got more national consciousness, like started to be the first thing we got in national consciousness, because it was right at the beginning of the internet. Somebody actually transcribed and started email forwarding this article we wrote, Clinton deploys vowels to Bosnia.
Rob Siegel.
Yeah, Rob Siegel's story. And but somebody, like, people were like, somebody typed it in and it started getting forwarded and forwarded and forwarded, and it was like somebody,
but it wasn't accredited.
It wasn't credited. No, it was like somebody published it.
It was just a meme with no name.
Yeah,
they didn't have The Onion on it.
They published it in the Baffler. The Realist.
Our engineer Carlos is putting up the big flag. It says we have a guest call in.
Oh, who could it be?
I don't know. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Janet. I'm a first-time listener, last-time caller.
This Janet sounds oddly familiar. Might you know her, Joe?
I'm familiar with Janet Ginsburg.
Is that you? Is this Janet Action 5, number 3 of Action 5 Ginsburg?
Number 3? Number 1?
Oh, are you number 1? Have you assigned numbers to the Action 5? The Action 5 is you, Anita, Janet.
We're all number 1.
Well, why don't you tell us what the Action 5 is?
Action 5 is the writing collective we have. It's me and Janet, my wife, my friend and co-author Chris Pauls, and my friend and co-author Scott Sherman. And that's where we wrote books and we've written other various projects and we keep on fishing around. It's funny because we anyway, I'm gonna Janet, do you want to tell like I'm gonna tell the story of how we got the cat book after the dog book.
Oh, I think you should tell it.
We approached to do the dangerous book for dogs and we wrote it in 5 weeks and I do not remember those 5 weeks at all. I have no idea how we did it because we were also working on all this other stuff. I can tell
everyone how we did it. The little country called China.
We subcontracted all of our writing to China. But the next thing we came up with, what's our follow-up project? We've got a lot of goodwill right now. We're really going to go, and we're going to the iron is hot. You know, we've got this book; it's kind of successful. So let's see if we can do another book. And so we wrote this treatment for this thing called Alan Durbin, my 70 years in television. And we're like, this is hilarious. This is like the best. It's like basically it had
sex, drugs. It had an old doddering man. We were big fans of it.
Yeah,
but a lot of bicentennial.
Oh, wow, this sounds fantastic.
And then, so when we took it to them, and our agent was like, "Wow, this is really funny. I don't know if we can sell it, though." And then they took it to the editor, and he's like, "Boy, this is really funny. I don't know if we can sell it, though. How do you feel about a cat book?"
And we're just like, it's so amazing that like that whole big decision in your life was made by someone in like 3 seconds of thinking about it. you know what I mean? Like someone just approached him, and they showed it to him, and they go, I'm going to think about this for 3 seconds. Yeah, how about cat book? So you used like 3 seconds of their decision-making time, and they used like you know, months and months of your life and creative life in doing so.
To be fair, he actually did like send it to some other people in the company, and yeah. They were like, nope.
They give them their 3 seconds. I'll tell you what, guys. Janet, stay on the line. We're going to take a break. Judy, what we have happening here on our break today?
We have a Clash song. We have White Man and Hammersmith Palais.
It's my favorite Clash song.
All right,
me too.
Happy birthday, aww. Joe Strummer. It's the Mike and Judy show.
Stay on the line, Todd
and
Janet.
Janet on the line. We'll be back in a minute. Six. All right, we're back on the Mike and Judy show. It's Mike Edison with Judy McGuire, the woman who is too hot for television, and our esteemed guest today, Joe Garden and Todd Hansen of The Onion. And our call-in guest, Janet Ginsburg, who is part of Action
5.
Action 5. Janet, how do you think like a dog? Tell us the secret.
Well, you know, can I just point out one thing before that? I think I'm kind of the missing link between... pornography and comedy that's uniting this whole...
We're so glad you brought that up.
I wanted to bring that up myself because, Joe, when you were talking about how that 5 weeks that you did Funny on Demand as Action 5, that first 5 weeks that you deployed Action 5 as like a strike force team, and you don't even remember writing it because you're like in a haze, it reminded me of Edison's book where he talks about all the pornography that he wrote. He wrote novels. He wrote like 16 novels or more.
I mean, 28 pornographic novels.
28 novels. And that made me think Janet also has that in common because you did a lot of writing for Larry Flint, right?
Yeah, well, and I think funny words are like the key, you know. Porn has a lot of funny words in it.
Well, porn has to be funny. I think on the level that we're perpetrating it anyway, printed porn as opposed to, the printed word as opposed to photographs or movie pictures.
Yeah, the printed word. I mean, prose. We're talking about prose.
Prose, that damn thing. Yes, yeah. The turn of phrase is very key.
Do either of you miss it? Do you ever think, man, I remember those days when I could write 35 pornographic novels?
I used to write a novel a week.
Yeah, you wrote a novel a week.
Yeah,
You know, that
I miss the productivity. It's pretty easy when you're like, okay, I know what's going to happen. Two guys and a girl have got a screw, then a girl and a girl, then a guy. It's very easy to
books,
all the marks in time.
The books that I was writing, we had plots. I mean, give me a break. I mean, these were played in three acts, like all great literature does.
No, yeah, you're writing about that in I Have Fun Everywhere I Go. It's quite touching, actually, when you talk about about how you took to the craft of it.
Thank you, Todd. Well, it's like this. All right, I'll tell everybody right now the whole secret to writing a porn novel. Okay, it's Little Miss Muffet sat in her tuffet eating her curds and whey. It's a plot, conflict, and resolution, and the right, and that's it. The premise, rather, is Little Miss Muffet sitting on her tuffet eating her curds and whey, and along comes a spider. There's your conflict, and scares Miss Muffet away. Okay, plot, conflict, and resolution. Now in the porn books, of course, there's no spider. I mean, the spider might end up, blowing Miss Muffet instead of scaring her away. But basically,
it's the same thing. I think you just described how to write a novel. Period.
In a heterosexual porn book, and believe me, we wrote them all. They say that the heroine, let's call her Janet. very, very lovely, comely young girl.
Really punk rock.
Very virginal young woman. Of course, all the boys want
Janet. The character.
The character, Janet. Yes, of course.
I like where this is going.
We all do. But she's not. She's not giving it up. Not for nothing. Maybe first base. Maybe second base, maybe a fumbling blowjob here or there, and then out in the back of Mrs. McCleary's barn or in Zach's hot rod, she finally gives it up, and then you know what happens? She just can't get enough. And we're off to the races.
And that's the storyline?
There you have it. Premise, conflict, and resolution.
Yeah. So premises, I did a lot of articles rather than novels. And I can say that really where I shine was the genre fiction aspect of porn. So for me, it was I'm going to do sci-fi this week. And, I had an alien female scientist sent to Earth to study human sexuality who discovered she discovered the first documented sexual use for the human anus.
Janet, I'm so jealous of you.
And then I had there was a spy novel with exploding butt beads and a sheik. So there's lots of different that's really what I miss.
I
wrote a sheik book. That was a white slavery book. I did a lot of wrestling porn.
I think the cross section is
even wrestling porn. It wouldn't exist hadn't been born. Didn't you invent wrestling porn?
It was my first homosexual book that I had to write. We all wrote everything, and I was handed a book called His Black Boyfriend. I would get the titles while I was writing.
So you had to write racist and homophobic?
Not racist, interracial.
Interracial. Yeah, there's a big difference, Todd. Okay.
And it was basically based on the beautiful chiaroscuro of the white man and the black man. And the white
living together in gay brotherhood.
In gay brotherhood. I didn't know what to write.
That sounds
at first.
Noble.
Mandinka.
No, WrestleMania 1. Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. Because when I got the assignment, I didn't know what to do. And I said, boss, I don't really know about gay sex.
I'm not a gay dude.
I'm not really your guy to write this. And he said to me, look, Edison, everybody here writes everything. So you got a hole and you got a pole. Now shut the fuck up and sit down and write your book.
Oh my God.
And I sort of sat there until I said, oh yeah, Mr. T, Hulk Hogan, this is going to be his black boyfriend. And of course they're too busy cornholing each other when they should be training for the match. And
I hope they actually know that they were the inspiration behind this. I think if you
maybe someday this will somehow get forwarded.
But saying that, Janet,
on the future internet to one of their descendants. They'll get a link with this
so
file.
Proud.
But saying that,
and
I'm so jealous.
Oh my God, Grandpa.
I'm so jealous of Janet because we were never allowed to write anything that couldn't really happen. In other words, I was not. Yes. I know. But there were rules against extraterrestrials. I was given a talking to. Nobody comes from outer space to have sex with Earth people because it's too far out. And
No, that's a big mistake.
Mike, I think you'll appreciate why that story actually happened, because they were getting so cheap at Hustler. They were like, you can't use new photo sets, so you've got to use old photos to illustrate everything. Of course, the magazine been running for 30 years, so I was like, look at these 1980s Geiger-esque photos of a woman straddling a leather couch.
Right.
And the couch was kind of amorphous and it looked sort of alien, so I was like, she looks like she's from outer space. Just gonna write that.
Let me throw this out to you guys. How much pot smoking is involved in being funny at The Onion and in pornography, Janet? So let's go with Joe first.
None. I actually don't, I did, and maybe once in a while, but I really don't. I just I find that I just, if I try to mix that with creativity, it just sort of it just trails off and, it's not, It doesn't help at all.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Not for me.
I was always much more of a stoner than I was a drinker, but I was never like creatively, like getting high was never the responsible thing for me to do to get creative. Like, you know, I was, I would, and.
Okay, this question has no legs.
We're not going to do a pot calypse too today. This is
it's not going to be like a big pro pot speech for me because I like pot, you know, I like more than alcohol, but it doesn't help me get shit done. Let me put it that way.
It just helps me go to sleep.
Yeah.
But the main thing is, though, you got to be funny every day and you got to find your inspiration somewhere. You're finding it in the daily news, you're finding it in the TV, you're just twisting it, or you're finding it in the absurdity.
Just finding it in the world.
In misery. I think most of it, for me, just came from just daily misery.
Yeah,
or just
daily
looking
misery,
at how,
that
like,
is a big one.
You can't
that'll help,
something
that'll help
funny
you write comedy
that,
a lot more
bad
than...
bad things start to happen.
Daily misery will help you write comedy a lot more than getting high will. That's for sure.
Right. The 9/11 issue of The Onion, when 9/11 happened, the issue you guys did right after that was, like, the best thing I've ever seen written on... I mean, I didn't think there was a way to make it funny, but
and
you did.
And that came from a lot of misery.
yeah, that was everybody was miserable. How could they not be?
It's funny because I remember that meeting was the longest meeting we've ever had at The Onion. It was about 8 hours. It was like a lot of like people were really, we were really upset. We weren't like I was.
Everybody
sure
sitting in the
right
room was freaking out
right.
because they just seen 3,000 people get mass murdered right in front of them live. I mean, that applies to everyone in the nation, for that matter. But, I mean, especially if you lived in New York and you could look out your window.
Yeah.
And what do you do? And how do you even approach that? It's like, you can't just not publish that week.
Well, we didn't publish that week.
Yeah, they published the week after.
We published the week after.
Okay, because you can't not,
well, we
not
couldn't,
publish that week.
We really, I mean, realistically, we couldn't because we couldn't get, like, we weren't, you know, you weren't supposed to go to Manhattan. So, for the first, like, for the first 4 days. So, we... You know, I think the angle we took is just like we just sort of talked about why it was successful is that it talked about like the way people were feeling. Like it wasn't about like you know, oh, we're gonna get them. It was like just this general the new sort of sense of malaise and sort of anxiety and you know general
just everybody feeling freaked out.
Yeah, it was like the new vulnerability because like you know you grow up with the United States is the premier world power and suddenly it's like oh this
I wasn't thinking anything as complicated as that. I was just like walking around going holy shit, a whole fucking bunch of people just got murdered right in front of my fucking face.
I just watched a giant building fall.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually still in LA at the time, and I remember my friend came over and we're like, well, nothing's happened here yet, but we're all going to die, so we'd better go to the grocery store. And I went and I was like, I'm going to put like 4 boxes of donuts on credit because I'm never going to have to pay for them. I'm going to die. So, like, you know, now I find all that hilarious because I really did buy strange, strange stuff, like thinking that it was the end and that's what I should be eating to, like, wait out, you know, the end of the world. So, I mean, so I think that a lot of the humor, and I didn't work on that issue, but I thought it was brilliant. I think a lot of the humor just came from, you know, finding the strange things you find yourself thinking and doing in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that Joe didn't mention is that, I mean, we've told this story many times in other places, but when we sat down to try to do an issue, we just assumed it was unspoken. We just assumed, everyone assumed we would do no jokes about the World Trade Center.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing funny about that at all. And we're sitting down there freaked out, and we're like, okay, how do we do it? I guess we got to do, you know, something that has nothing to do with the news at all, you know. And so we started trying to work on that issue, and we couldn't do it.
Because nobody could think of anything else.
Because nobody could think of anything else. And we ended up deciding to do the entire issue all on one subject, which is something we've almost never done. There's only a few times that has happened. And it was like everything was all about that. Because we're like, we can't talk about anything else. We can't even think about anything else.
Yeah, that was really impressive.
But we did not set out to be like, we're going to be funny now. We didn't feel funny. We didn't want to be making jokes about World Trade Center.
I actually assumed that this was going to be the exact opposite. I thought that what was going to happen is people were going to read this and we were going to be run out of New York on the rails.
Yeah, like, I was terrified that would happen.
Well, everybody needed it, though.
Absolutely. It's 10 years later. We're coming up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11. Mm-hmm. What do you guys have planned for this? Because now there are funny things to make fun of, and I'm not talking about the event itself, but the hangover it and the way the infighting among people.
And who's being invited? And, like, J-Lo's invited, but, like, the survivors aren't.
It's a big fucking catty mess. You know? Seriously, it's a big catty mess, and there's still a hole in the ground, basically, because no one can get their shit together.
Well, the Onion,
they build a building, and the Port Authority of New York is fighting with the Port Authority of New Jersey, and Fatso Governor Christie is fighting with Bloomberg, and J-Lo?
No, huh? Okay. I'm not just saying a celebrity. I don't know that J-Lo is invited.
But yeah, probably she is.
She probably is.
Well,
she's a survivor.
She's a survivor in her own way.
Come on, give her some.
What about her needs?
She helped me get through the whole
society.
Thing.
You know, the great thing about a tragedy is that the only great thing about a tragedy is the way that it can help us to realize, you know, what's important in life. And so hopefully people will be reminded about the existence of J-Lo. Her career will in some way
be boosted.
Be boosted slightly from wherever it is now.
Maybe it'll even bring her and Mark Anthony back together.
Oh, wouldn't that be sweet?
That would be good.
And maybe they can come back together on the Mike and Judy show.
Oh, my God. Call their publicist.
This is good. Wow, I cannot believe how fast. This is the fastest half hour in the history of
the
internet.
Definitely
is. It's been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, take that, Rachel Kramer Brussels. Woo! Just kidding.
In our past guests.
I know. I'm just saying.
Wait a second. We don't have no policy about not dissing past guests.
All right, then.
Come on.
Edison has no policy about not dissing anyone.
He dissed our guest 1 week. Who just recorded
a record. Edison will diss his everyone. That's part of his ethos.
That's not true.
Yes.
I'm the one bringing the sunshine to this operation.
We had Reed Paley on, who just did a record with Black Francis from the Pixies. Mr. Grump, the day of his birthday, was like, fucking Pixies suck.
He doesn't like the Beatles. Get him talking about the Beatles. He'll go on and on about how much the Beatles suck.
And that's part of the problem with the Pixies, though, is they use these like Beatles-esque chord changes that I don't like. Like Stones chord changes, you know? It's just not a sound that I think.
Somebody's threatening a boycott if we keep dissing the Beatles. It's on our Facebook page.
Really?
Someone's threatening a boycott? Good, fuck them.
You're
going to
listener
and
me, because I don't like
the
Beatles.
Yes!
Oh, man, I don't believe what I'm hearing.
Jack, where are you calling from? You're like really down the street. Why don't you just come
they're
by?
They're okay. They're like, you know, they're all right. Whatever.
Janet, you're like just down the street, right? You're like calling from like a payphone at the corner or something, right?
You know what? I will be, because I have a practice right around that. I just found out where you guys are, and I'll be there at 5.
Band practice?
Yeah, yes. Her punk rock band is going to be playing.
Okay. I think it's morphing into a doom metal band against my will, but what are you going to do?
That's good, because the world's got enough punk rock bands.
Yeah, we need more doom metal bands.
Yeah, exactly. Can you be ready?
I just wrote a new song after I saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes yesterday. So.
Oh, that's always good. You know? That's good inspiration.
That's good. What song would that be?
So far, it's just called Man is an Upright Animal. That's all I have.
Man from
So far, it's called Untitled Rise of the Planet of the Apes inspired project.
Subtitle number one.
It's about the barbarian rise of human beings, not apes.
Is the phrase "damn dirty ape" going to be in there, or maybe?
No, that was in another song I wrote like 7 years ago in the Hestons. You remember me telling you about the Hestons?
I've heard of the Hestons.
The Hestons had a song called "Damn You Dirty Ape." I think I love you.
All right.
That's all history.
We will look forward to your glue metal band. Maybe you can come on for our special 9/11 show and entertain us with that.
That would be awesome.
All right. It's been another amazing Mike and Judy show. It's Mike Edison with Judy McGuire and our guest Joe Garden, Todd Hanson, The Onion, and, of course, the irrepressible Janet Ginsburg via voice transfer protocol. Janet, you got to come down and be on the show for realsies one time, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, then.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
See you guys next week.
Thank you very much for having us.
I had a great time.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption song.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Grippers, Boardwalk 86. Free party!